Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by Carium, the telehealth platform enabling healthcare's digital transformation, helping you care for people within the fabric of their daily lives. Now here's your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Laura Polknin, clinical exercise physiologist and health and wellness coordinator at the Mecca Gym. Laura, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
So, Laura, what I always like to do before getting into the main part of the conversation is to allow my guests to give a little bit more of an introduction as to who they are and what they do. So the floor is yours.
Absolutely. So I am a certified clinical exercise physiologist, and I work for St. Luke's Healthcare in the lifestyle medicine department. And then I'm also the health and wellness coordinator at the Mecca Gym, where I do personal training, health coaching, et cetera. And I've been doing this for the better part of 10 years.
So Laura, what kind of first got you into the healthcare field?
So at first, you know, when I was in college, I knew I wanted to do something just to help people feel better. I was always into sports. I was athletic. And I kind of found out about exercise science. So I pursued my undergrad, and then I pursued my master's in kinesiology. And to be honest, you know, when I first got out of college, I really did not want to work in healthcare. I didn't want to be stuck in a hospital, quote unquote. That was kind of my idea of it. And then, so I dove more into the fitness side of things. I worked at multiple different kinds of facilities, whether they were private or large. And then, you know, life takes turns, and I ended up looking for a job in Idaho. And I found this great job at Lifestyle Medicine, Cardiac and Pulmonary Rehab with St. Luke's. And I was like, okay, it's healthcare. I'm not sure if I want to dive into it. I had dabbled a little bit before with some exercise physiology departments for some other companies, but I really liked their message. I liked that they were trying to bring in exercise, nutrition, and overall well-being to post-cardiac and pulmonary patients. So that's what kind of, you know, really started the kickoff for me in the last 3 to 4 years for healthcare.
And you I think mentioned a bunch of different things that I'd like to be able to break apart, because it's, you know, I think there are areas that people may or may not have heard about, or if they have, maybe don't have a full appreciation. And kind of the first couple are kind of your reference to majoring in exercise science and also a focus on kinesiology. So could you kind of give everyone kind of a framing of what that actually means?
Yeah. So exercise science can be really a large encompassing. It could be someone who wants to be a Phy Ed teacher, someone who wants to do research in a lab with biomechanics and how the body moves. And then it can also lead someone more so down the road of like personal training. And with kinesiology, overall, it's a study of the movement of the human body. And it helps you kind of connect all the pieces, the brain, the body, and then overall what our results are going to be.
So, and then how does that translate into, you know, kind of the healthcare system? Is that kind of looking at physical or occupational therapy or kind of other aspects?
So that's one route you can take. Typically, someone might get an undergrad degree in exercise science and then go into PT or OT. But with PT and OT, they tend to focus more on an injury and then rehab afterwards. With exercise science, I'd call it a little bit more proactive. We don't wait for the injury. Sometimes someone will see an exercise physiologist because they, you know, have knee arthritis and they really don't want, they want to do stuff before maybe surgery is warranted or before an injury happens. In my particular field with cardiac and pulmonary rehab, we use our exercise physiology knowledge to help a patient essentially repair the heart and be able to function again, be able to, you know, whether it's work in the garden or mountain bike again, et cetera. So it's kind of like the before the injury happens or before it gets too far.
So is it fair to say it's kind of, you know, as you're saying, it's being very proactive. So it seems to very much align with some of the changing perspectives of healthcare as a whole, which is to focus on overall health and well-being as opposed to waiting for an issue to become acute and then having to get someone back to being healthy.
Right, absolutely.
You also mentioned lifestyle medicine. So, you know, kind of one, can you give everyone kind of a grounding in what lifestyle medicine is as well? But given my level of understanding, it seems like that aligns very well with the proactive approach that you were just describing for the exercise science.
Yeah. So lifestyle medicine is that preventative bit. At the end of the day, it's really something that should be in every doctor's office. Lifestyle medicine encompasses six pillars. It's going to be exercise, nutrition, sleep, emotional wellness, and then also substance use. And obviously that is not using substances. And so what we do at Lifestyle Medicine is we really bring in that patient, whether they are pre-diabetic, whether they just had a heart attack, you know, whether they just need to lose weight. And we kind of look at all those pillars of their life and how they're affecting their health. It's honestly one of my favorite things that's coming through in healthcare, because it's not just about, okay, you're here, you are, you know, you're pre-hypertensive, so we want to put you on some pills. Instead, it's looking at, okay, what does your daily movement look like? What does your nutrition look like? And also, how's the home life? Are we stressed? Are we sleeping good? And it brings it all together.
So kind of, as you said, having ended up within kind of the traditional piece of the healthcare system, you know, connected to a major hospital in Idaho, you know, were you seeing challenges to adopting a lifestyle medicine approach from an organization like that?
When I first got on board, we were really pushing for the lifestyle medicine department to have its own home. But I think at the end of the day, everyone knows that it's needed. I think just because it's so different from traditional medicine, that it can be difficult for anyone to adopt new practices, for any, you know, referrals to come through. I would definitely say in the last year, those referrals have increased. People are seeing the benefits, but what people tend to realize is, wow, this really digs into my life. Like, this is going to ask me some hard questions. And I think that that can sometimes be an issue, whether people want to dig into those hard questions, or in traditional healthcare, does the doctor have the time, right? Are they able to sit down for a whole hour or maybe even two and dig into what's going on in the client's life, and where do the referrals need to go? Do they need to go to a nutritionist? Do they need to go see an exercise physiologist? You know, do they need to have a sleep study done, et cetera? So I think that's maybe one of the bigger challenges, is the time that's needed to make this practice really work.
Yeah, no, I would definitely agree, because as you're describing it, it does delve into so many areas. But again, diving into a lot of areas that are becoming kind of these key focal points, which, you know, as you're saying, gathering informational points about, you know, so many points of a person's life, because, you know, I think you made a great point. You don't have that much time when you're in, you know, in the physician's office or seeing a member of the care team. It's most of your life happens outside.
Yes.
And I suspect this is a little bit of a loaded question. You know, I think you said over the past year, which kind of lines up with the inability or discouragement of coming in to receive services because of COVID. You know, what tools have you seen that have enabled or promoted kind of the lifestyle medicine approach over the course of the pandemic?
So over the course of the pandemic, we definitely struggled. And what's really come to play, and just with how our world is changing, is the virtual environment. And we actually, right before the pandemic, partnered with a company called Carium to offer essentially a mobile connection to our patients, where they could track every aspect of their health. So they could track their sleep, their nutrition, their activity. And this could be like manual uploads and tracking, or it can connect to a wearable device, since a lot of people now have some sort of wearable device or even electronic blood pressure cuff. And then we can also communicate with them. It's almost like a text message. So it's super fast and efficient. And it kind of, you know, empowers the patient. And I think that that was a big game changer for a lot of our patients, is they still felt supported. We did do some virtual offerings. We started offering nutrition courses online for patients to watch. And then we just really had to change what we were doing. Instead of patients coming in to exercise with us, we had to take into account what they had available at home and just kind of change what we were telling them to do.
And are you seeing any kind of change in the ability to provide all those offerings as, you know, we're getting further into 2021, and, you know, there seems to be more of a light at the end of the tunnel of getting back to a more active society?
Yeah, no, absolutely. When we were finally allowed to reopen our doors, we we had to adjust how many patients we were allowing into the clinic at a time because we have a full gym there. So we were able to only bring in maybe 5 patients at a time to exercise. And slowly, you know, with following guidelines, et cetera, we've been able to open up our classes and been able now to have 20 patients in at a time. And obviously we've increased our cleaning protocols, we increase our screening options, but it's been nice to slowly move back towards a normal clinic routine. We still have some of our online virtual offerings, but we are able now to, you know, be able to actually interact and see our patients.
Yeah. So it kind of sounds like very much, you know, striking a good balance because, you know, I think as you were saying, you found a lot of power that could be delivered, you know, kind of remotely and through the virtual connections. But at the same time, it's still helpful to have those in-person interactions and in-person visits to, I suspect, provide kind of a different form of a check-in point.
Absolutely. You know, it offers accountability. It offers that connection with your patients. It offers, you know, when I'm talking to someone on the phone and I ask them how they're doing, maybe they're struggling. Your voice definitely changes with empathy, but I think, you know, it goes a long way when someone can see your eyes and your face and read what you're saying to them. So it's definitely nice to get people back in the clinic.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I'm sure that the patients appreciate it as well. It's, you know, it's, you know, I think to some degree, it's, you know, kind of that the Zoom fatigue or, you know, all the virtual fatigue that you hear about. But at the same time, I think you're definitely right where, you know, even if you're doing something by video and you can see the person you're interacting, there's still so many other visual and nonverbal cues that come up when you're, you know, face-to-face interacting with somebody.
Yes.
So, and actually kind of thinking about that, you know, so did you have any, or kind of what challenges did you experience and maybe what unexpected benefits did you find in terms of how you were able to, you know, identify, you know, issues that your patients might have been encountering or, you know, being able to, you know, document progress from following, you know, kind of the plans that you might have been laying out?
I think that, you know, with being in a virtual environment, a big issue is that since we are not seeing them in person, you are taking the patient's word for how they're doing and how they're progressing. With the help of wearable technology, you definitely can actually get them real data, right? Not just objective data. And it definitely helps to see, okay, your resting heart rates are in fact coming down, you know, post-exercise. Your blood pressures are improving. And sometimes you have a little cause for concern when it's just coming from someone's word of mouth and you're not getting true data. But I will say with Carium, at least we do get to see, wow, with, you know, our tracking system, you're getting more steps a day. On average a week, you're getting, you know, 5,000 more steps. How are you feeling in correlation to that? And then having graphical data from the app, being able to show that to providers and say, yes, they have in fact made these changes and this is how they're improving has been helpful too.
And seeing the benefit or hearing the benefit that you were describing from you being able to kind of pull that continuous tracking data, how have you seen, you know, the patients who are using it react? Because it's, you know, as you're saying before, you might have been relying upon a self-report. And now, you know, if you're still doing that kind of verbal interview, but now you can be able to essentially gut check it with the actual data, you know, are you seeing that enable people to take better control of the changes that they're trying to make?
Yeah, I think anytime something's laid out on paper and is a visual form for people, it can be kind of that aha moment. You know, typically we can look at like blood pressures, for instance. Someone will say, oh, I have high blood pressure, right? And they just use that form. They don't actually say the number. And then when you start having people actually record it, and then you look over time as someone improves their sleep, they improve their nutrition, and they improve their exercise, and how also on that blood pressure graph, that those blood pressures start to trend down. But then all of a sudden they go out and have like a high sodium meal, like Chinese food, and then that blood pressure skyrocks again, and they can see that on the graph. It makes that connection like, wow, okay, these are actually connected. This is what's going on. So I think the visual aid is very helpful for patients. Obviously, not every patient is going to use this tool, but the ones that have, we do have really great reports on it.
Yeah, and I would agree again that it's, you know, when you can be able to visually present to someone information, then it grabs a different type of power. And for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Laura Polkinen. We've been talking about lifestyle medicine and, you know, a greater focus on trying to keep people healthy. And Laura, I'd kind of like to pivot the conversation a little bit, because, you know, at the beginning, you were talking about working within a hospital system, but you also mentioned that you're working at a gym as well. So how do you see a continuum of care by working in the different settings, or kind of what inspired you to want to be able to be interacting with people from both within the healthcare system and in the gym setting?
Yeah. So I think that, you know, I've always worked in fitness facilities, whether it's your tiny 30 member gym, or if it's a huge corporate gym that has 24,000 members. And, you know, there's pros and cons to working in a fitness facility versus working at a healthcare facility. With healthcare, people go to the hospital if they're sick. A lot of the times they don't go there for preventative care. Typically you hear someone say, I need to lose weight. And instead of going to their doctor, they're going to get a gym membership, or if they have, you know, different fitness goals. So I've always kept my foot in the door in fitness facilities to try to help people with that preventative aspect. The Mecca Gym is a little different in the sense that, you know, the owner is wonderful. He has his undergrad and his master's, and all the other trainers here really work on the overall total image of the body when it comes to those six pillars of lifestyle medicine. So I enjoy being part of this team, because whether it's someone who they've done cardiac rehab and now they're like, what do I do now? They can come here, they can work with professionals that are certified and have the ability to know what's going on with them. Or if it's someone who they really don't want to go on, you know, blood pressure medications, or if they're struggling with pre-diabetes, they can come here and they can still work with a clinical exercise physiologist. They can get that whole encompassing help, and they can hopefully try to keep themselves out of the hospital a little bit longer.
And you raised a very interesting point in there, which, you know, with the example of, you know, someone potentially saying that they'd like to lose weight, where they might go to a fitness center and sign up for a membership as opposed to seeing their, you know, physician or someone else or another clinical person that they're working with. As you're working with clients at the fitness center, do you take a different approach to working with them than you would if you were, say, in the hospital setting? Or are you kind of taking similar approaches? Because, you know, I think from what you're saying, your approach is always going to be focused on overall health and well-being.
Yeah, I think that I kind of sit in the two worlds as a clinical exercise physiologist. So typically my initial approach is very similar. I ask for that background, I ask for their medical history, et cetera. With my experience and my degrees, my education, I can understand that medical history. So I take advantage of that, and I really try to get the whole picture. You know, what's nice though about in the healthcare setting is you're getting a direct referral from another provider that really pinpoints what's going on. In the fitness industry here at the Mecca, I have to dig a little bit more, right? I have to get more of the picture from them. So maybe it was, you know, they've had, you know, total knee replacements, but then they've also dealt with, you know, weight gain. And now they're maybe dealing with, you know, their pre-hypertension or even hypertension. So you kind of have to dig through those layers and find out, you know, okay, what part should we work on first?
Given that people, when they're going to a fitness center, have theoretically already self-selected and might have more self-motivation to engage in the changes, is that actually an accurate assessment? And, you know, depending on the validity, you know, how does that impact your ability to get people to follow through on your recommendations?
I would definitely say someone who is coming into the Mecca or fitness center is typically a little bit more self-motivated, right? They've taken that initial step. Someone didn't put in that referral for them. They had to look it up. They had to walk in the door, send that email. They typically do adopt the changes faster than the healthcare setting. But there's still going to be barriers, right? At the end of the day, we're all human. Sometimes the lifestyle that we're living is kind of hard to change. But there's definitely a little bit more self-motivation there. But at the end of the day, no matter if they're a patient in the clinic or a client at the gym, if you're able to find their why, you can typically latch on and get some motivation with that.
And what are some of your approaches for being able to find the why?
So the why is a huge thing. The why is, at the end of the day, why they truly walked in the door or why they want to get better. And you really try to dig into who they are first, right? Are they a mom? Are they a grandma? Are they, you know, a gentleman who used to hunt and fish and he hasn't been able to do that in years? Like, what is that driving factor? And, you know, what do they truly want? Because a lot of times people come in and they'll say, I want to lose weight. But really, why do you want to lose the weight? Maybe they haven't had confidence to go out to dinner in a year. You know, maybe they're dealing with a divorce and they just, you know, want to feel good and they want to get out there. So you really have to, you get to know whether it's a patient or a client, you need to get to know them. And that's, you know, kind of your first main job.
And it would seem intuitive that the more you can get to know someone and establish an actual, you know, kind of relationship with them, the easier it'll be for a, you know, trust to develop. And then if you have trust, it can translate into, you know, accepting advice and following through on the advice that's being provided.
Yes, trust is everything. And, you know, having that relationship, just like having a good relationship with your primary care provider or your insurance agent, right? It's going to be someone giving you advice, but also being your coach and cheerleader with you. And you want to be able to trust what's coming out of their mouth and believe in it so that you can do it.
And kind of related to that, one thing that I'm curious about is, you know, looking both at, you know, the clinical side and, you know, kind of the Mecca side, you know, what's the typical length of time that you work with somebody? And then what happens, you know, when the direct engagement starts to tail off? You know, kind of how do you see self-motivation then come in terms of sticking to the changes that have been made?
So I'd say this is where they kind of vastly differ. In the clinical side, whatever your referral is for, whether it's cardiac rehab, lifestyle medicine, et cetera, nutrition coaching, it typically has a timeline, right? And so it can be anywhere from 36 sessions at a cardiac rehab facility or maybe 3 months of health coaching. And then from there, it's really the patient's job to continue with those lifestyle changes. At times there are like post-support programs where there's a check-in here and there, but really it's the patient's job to continue. Now at the Mecca, there's really no timeline. It depends. So if a client comes in and says they want to lose weight by their daughter's wedding, maybe that's a goal length, but I've had clients that I've worked with for 7 years. And it depends on, you know, a financial situation of someone, a time situation. So everyone's life has seasons, right? Whether you have a new child and then you don't have as much time, or your kids get into sports, or you get a new job. But in the fitness world, relationships can last a very long time, but the type of training can ebb and flow. A lot of times if people get busy, they'll switch to online coaching or training. So it's just, you know, interval check-ins, whatever works with their life. And then they're still getting a plan. They're getting that support, that accountability. And then maybe they'll come back into the gym too. It just, you know, you have to be able to provide for anyone at whatever stage of life they're in.
Yeah. And I think that description really probably underscores an arguable failing within the healthcare system, because from the clinical side, if you're saying that someone was referred over because of a particular issue, I suspect that many of those issues don't just go away when the course of treatment ends. There is always going to be that kind of underlying concern. And to promote the better health and well-being, as we've been talking about, it seems like ongoing interaction might be preferable.
Exactly. And that's definitely a shortcoming, especially when we're looking at, you know, insurance payers, et cetera, and they'll only cover a certain amount of time. And so one thing that we can offer our patients, which I'm so thankful for, is with the Carium app, they can use that for a lifetime. So they can at least continue to use that tracking device. And once we teach them how to understand the data, they can hopefully use that for motivation. And just depending on the facility, sometimes, like I said, there are those support programs or check-ins that they can do. But yeah, it's definitely difficult when there's only a finite amount of time that's given towards that issue.
Yes. And I'm sure at times you're fighting tooth and nail just to get as, you know, not even as much time as you necessarily prefer, but just as much as might be allowable. But, you know, Laura, believe it or not, we're already almost at the end of our time. So I'd like to just kind of round out the conversation by, you know, asking, you know, if you kind of had a magic wand, you know, how would you like to change how the healthcare system interacts with, you know, the individual, you know, individuals coming through the system, as a way to really help, you know, get to that goal of better health and well-being that we keep coming back to?
Oh, I love this question. I really think that starting at a young age, you know, when you establish a primary care provider, that instead of asking what's bothering you today, asking, so tell me about your activity, tell me about your nutrition, but really digging into those. Typically those questions are asked, but they're, besides writing down the answers, we're not digging into that. And a lot of times we're just giving very generic guidelines like, okay, get 3 to 5 days of exercise, 150 minutes a week. But we need to ask the bigger questions. What's your stress life, your sleep? And then we really need to talk about that lifestyle medicine approach. So ideally at the beginning of, you know, establishing care and then doing those check-ins every once in a while and asking the hard questions, right? Like, so why hasn't exercise changed? You know, what is the barrier there? I almost feel like every primary care provider would benefit from having a health coach or two in their clinics, so they can, you know, be there to support that, take off that load, and kind of help teach people what healthy living really is. Because at the end of the day, we've really, unfortunately, as a society, I think we've kind of missed the ball on that, and now we're trying to catch up. And it's something we really need to do, especially for our future generations.
Yeah, no, I think that paints a very hopeful picture, and it optimistically, you know, hopefully the system will keep moving in that direction. But, you know, kind of believe it or not, as I mentioned, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Laura Polkinen, for a great conversation today.
Thank you so much for having me on.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCDEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.